Chairman, and my dear brothers and sisters in the Lord Jesus Christ. This evening we're going to take some thoughts from Proverbs chapter 27, and before we do so, I thought I might just introduce this particular part of the book of Proverbs. If you come to Proverbs chapter 25, and to the first verse, we read these words. Because, you see, this is part of a particular section of the book, and we're told in the 25th verse, in the 25th chapter rather, and in the first verse, what this section is all about. It says, "These are also Proverbs of Solomon, which the men of Hezekiah, king of Judah, copied out." And so these were proverbs written by one king and copied out by another king. So they're proverbs for kings, you see. And this chapter of the book of Proverbs begins a section that runs, in fact, right through to the end of Proverbs chapter 29. Proverbs 25 to 29 is the entire section of Solomon's proverbs that were written out by the men of Hezekiah, king of Judah. And they're proverbs for all those who would be kings of the age to come. They are royal principles for life. Now, you see, it's interesting, isn't it, with the book of Proverbs? You see, I think we tend to take Proverbs as being a sort of a potpourri of ideas, don't we? That each chapter has all sorts of pithy maxims, but that there's no real coherent picture to them all. But in this particular section of the book, and probably in others, I think, in fact, that there is very much a structure and order to all which follows. The key, actually, is finding the theme. And I think that each of these chapters, 25 to 29, has a particular theme. And once you find the theme, then the whole of that chapter, in fact, opens up, and you'll find that it hews very closely to that particular idea. Now, Proverbs 25 is on how to handle issues. Proverbs 26 is on how to discern character. Proverbs 27 is on how to manage relationships. Proverbs 28 is on how to learn values. And Proverbs 29 is on how to govern wisely. These are the royal principles of those who would be kings of the age to come. And each chapter, you see, has a special theme, which opens up the spirit and the meaning, we believe, of that particular chapter. So chapter 27, then, which is what we're going to look at in part this evening, we might describe as really about how to manage relationships, how to manage human relationships. That's the theme, you see, of the whole chapter. And the chapter divides as follows. Verses 1 to 4, which we're not going to look at, is on our attitude to oneself. Because, you see, that becomes really the pivot of all relationships that we enjoy or don't enjoy with other people. How we ought to view ourselves. Proverbs 27, verses 1 to 4. And then verses 5 to 17, which, God willing, will be the subject of our thoughts this evening, relationships with friends. Relationships with friends, how vital they are, and how important that we know how to develop and to nurture them. And then verses 18 to 22, dealings with servants. And finally, verses 23 to 27, care of the household. And you see, even for a king, these were all the human relationships that he would ever come into contact with. His attitude to himself, the nurturing of his friends, his dealings with his servants, and his responsibilities for the care of his household. If he understood all of those things, then he would be a wise king. So we're going to take up the record then from Proverbs 27, verse 5, and we hope to go through to the 17th verse, for these verses are on the subject of dealing with relationships with friends. Now, you'll notice then that the 5th verse begins with these words. It says there, "Open rebuke is better than secret love." Another translation says, "Better is reproof revealed than love concealed." Another translation says, better is a frank word of reproof than the love that will not speak. Now the question is, brothers and sisters, what is the love that will not speak? And the answer is, you see, that it's the love of admiration, the love of adoration, but not the love of true friendship that really helps. Those who count themselves as our friends, who can only flatter, are not really helpful to us at all. In fact, flattery, of course, is very dangerous, especially for kings. Even kings, you see, need good friends. And the principle is that genuine friendship is characterized by a love that seeks the ultimate good of the other, not merely their admiration. So says the proverb, better that some rebuke is involved in good friendships. So will that rupture the friendship? Well, no, says the Proverbs, because if you come to chapter 28 for a moment, we read these words in the 23rd verse. That rebuke between friends, far from breaking the relationship, will in fact help to cement their bond of friendship. Proverbs 28 says, in the 23rd verse, he that rebuketh a man afterwards shall find more favour than he that flattereth with the tongue. That's a very similar proverb, really, in spirit, isn't it? He that rebuketh a man afterwards shall find more favour than he that flattereth with the tongue. And if we go back to chapter 9 for a moment, we have a very similar thought in the 9th chapter, where we're told these words in the 8th verse. Proverbs 9 and verse 8 says, reprove not a scorner, lest he hate thee, but rebuke a wise man, and he will love thee. So you see, what the proverb is teaching is that those rebukes given in that kindly spirit of friendship, that we might help one another, if given between friends, will in fact deepen the friendship rather than rupturing it. But lest we should misunderstand, if we come back to Proverbs 27 and the 5th verse, lest we should misunderstand the 5th verse, we remember the words of our Lord Jesus Christ in Matthew 18 and verse 15, when he said, if you have a fault between thee and thy brother, says the Lord, go and tell him his fault between thee and him alone, says Christ, doesn't he? And if he hear thee, thou hast gained thy brother. So when in Proverbs 27 verse 5 it says open rebuke, it doesn't mean open, you see, in the sense of a public criticism. The proverb isn't teaching that we ought to go around openly and publicly criticizing our friends. That will actually be quite damaging to our friendships. The openness of the proverb is the frankness and the honesty and the sincerity of heart with which the rebuke is given. But it's given, brothers and sisters, in private. True friends don't openly criticize one another. And so, you see, I think part of the spirit then, the real teaching of Proverbs 27 verse 5, is that part of the secret of developing true friendships is to have that spirit within ourselves that will accept rebuke from friends. You know, none of us find that easy, do we? But it's part of the secret, you see, says Proverbs, to true and lasting friendships. Of course, you've got to be careful with rebuke, don't you? You see what verse 6 says? It says, faithful are the wounds of a friend, but the kisses of an enemy are deceitful. By the way, you see the word friend there. Now, we did say that this section is on the subject of friends. You notice how that when we read carefully, that is, in fact, the key word. You see verse 6, friend. And again in verse 9, the sweetness of a man's friend. And again in verse 10, twice, thine own friend and thy father's friend, forsake not. In verse 14, he that blesseth his friend. And again in verse 17, so a man sharpeneth the countenance of his friend. Yes, these proverbs are about friendships, you see. And what the sixth verse says is, faithful are the wounds of a friend, but the kisses of an enemy are deceitful. Now, the wounds of the sixth verse are not wounds to hurt or to maim. They are wounds to correct and to help. And they're found here in contrast, says the seventh verse, or the sixth verse rather, to the kisses of the enemy which are deceitful. And of course we think of the kiss as being a mark of friendship, but here the mark of friendship is debased so that it becomes a surface act of warmth, an apparent act of affection, but underneath there is ill feeling or perhaps even hatred concealed. And we think, of course, don't we, of the classic illustration of a deceitful kiss, don't we, of a man who signalled another man by the offering of a kiss. And you know what the Lord said on that occasion when Judas came to him? He said two things. You know, one of the first things that the Lord said was, friend, wherefore art thou come? Judas had signalled him with a kiss, you see, the mark of friendship. And the Lord said, friend, wherefore art thou come? But you know what the Lord also says in replying to Judas? And you see, it's almost as if I think that this thing was perhaps the matter of greatest grief to the Lord. He says, Judas, is it with a kiss that thou betrayest the Son of Man? Not just that Judas had betrayed him, you see, but that the act of betrayal was in the form of the mark of friendship. Is it with a kiss that you betray, says Jesus? It grieved the Lord that that was so. Actually, you see the word deceitful in Proverbs 27 and verse 6. It actually doesn't really mean deceitful. It actually is probably better translated multiplied, or as the RSV says, profuse. The kisses of the enemy are profuse. And what we're being told here is that true friendship is seen not in the smothering protests of love, or in the frequent assertions of feeling for one another, but in those acts of occasional correction that seek true and mutual improvement. And by the way, you see, if the kisses of the enemy are many, then by implication, how are the wounds of the friend administered? And the answer is, by way of contrast, sparingly, aren't they? See the contrast? The wounds of a friend are faithful but sparing. The kisses of the enemy are frequent and deceitful. And so we're reminded that even criticism of one another ought to be sparing. Our friendships will not last long if we ceaselessly criticise or correct one another. But the lesson of the proverb is that friendship is something deeper than merely the outward tokens of affection. Mind you, we've got to be careful, don't we, about friendship, because you see what verse 7 says. Verse 7 says, the full soul loatheth an honeycomb, but to the hungry soul every bitter thing is sweet. Now you see, in the context of these proverbs, we're talking, remember, about friendship. And so we believe that the warning of the seventh verse is against the harmful effect of too much contact, even with faithful friends. The sweetness of honey is similar to the sweetness of a man's friend, verse 9. But the warning of this verse, verse 7, is that friendship can be strained by repeated contact or excessive contact. Actually, you know, if you come back to Proverbs 25, you'll notice that this proverb is really repeated in a very similar way in Proverbs 25. Just see how this is used very skillfully in Proverbs 25, verses 16 and 17. Now notice these two verses that really stand together. Hast thou found honey? Eat so much as is sufficient for thee, lest thou be filled therewith and vomited. So the lesson was that honey here in Proverbs 25 stands for anything that's good. But even good things, says the proverb, taken to excess, lead not to ecstasy, but to nausea. One must learn that there is a limit. Lest, says the proverb, thou be filled therewith. Now you see that word filled in Proverbs 25 and verse 16. Take a note of that, filled. Now verse 17, found in juxtaposition, you see. Withdraw thy foot from thy neighbour's house, lest he be weary of thee and so hate thee. But the word weary in verse 17 is the same word as the word filled in verse 16. So that what Proverbs 25 and verse 17 is really saying is just as one ought not to have too much of a honeycomb lest thou be filled, so you ought to be careful not to be in your neighbour's house too often lest he be filled with your company and so hate thee, says the proverb. In other words, Proverbs 25 and verse 17 is really saying in a very clever way, your friendship may be very sweet indeed, but you can have too much of a good thing, you know. Now back to Proverbs 27 then, and the seventh verse. Because you see, I think that's the lesson of the proverb. That friendship can be overdone. There is a need even between true friends that they respect one another's privacy. You know, you see it with little children, don't you? Little children, perhaps especially little girls, they have this time, you see, where they've got to have friends. They've got to have a special friend, a close friend. And they write notes to each other, and they have secrets. You see, they share secrets. And in the end, they can't be out of one another's sight. Whatever the one does, the other must do. And in the end, you know what happens? The friendship actually ruptures, doesn't it? You know why? They ate too much of the honeycomb. So we've got to be careful even in our friendships, you see. Mind you, the verse says at the end of verse 7, but to the hungry soul every bitter thing is sweet. Hunger, they say, is the best sauce, isn't it? And true friends always appreciate contact with each other, even if it is infrequent. And even if it involves the bitterness of correction or rebuke. Now look how wise verse 8 is. Because you see, in the 7th verse, what the proverb has warned us against is the dangers of too much friendship. But lest we should use that as an excuse to therefore not develop our friendships in the truth, verse 8 gives us the corollary. Verse 8 says, as a bird that wandereth from her nest, so is a man that wandereth from his place. So as verse 7 has warned against the danger of excessive contact between friends, now comes a warning against the opposite extreme of too little friendship. Now, you see the word nest here. We might just turn up a couple of references in terms of the nest in the Bible, because I think these references help us to understand what the nest was all about. The first is in Deuteronomy, and at the 22nd chapter, Deuteronomy chapter 22. What does the nest symbolize? As a bird that wandereth from her nest. Now, what goes on in the nest? What's the nest for? Well, Deuteronomy 22 says, in the 6th verse, these words, if a bird's nest chance to be before thee in the way, in any tree or on the ground, whether they be young ones or eggs, and the dam sitting upon the young or upon the eggs, thou shalt not take the dam with the young, but thou shalt in any wise let the dam go and take the young to the... You see what the nest is all about? It's all about eggs and young ones. Do you see that? Isn't that what a nest is all about? Eggs and young ones. That's what goes on in a nest, you see. Come and have a look at Isaiah in a rather unusual context, but a very interesting application in Isaiah chapter 10. Now, here again is the principle of the nest. Here, by the way, in the context of the rapacious drive of the king of Assyria in Hezekiah's day. And in Isaiah chapter 10 and verse 14, the king of Assyria says, "And my hand hath found as a nest the riches of the people, and as one gathereth eggs that are left, have I gathered all the earth. And there was none that..." Now just look at this. I want you to actually see this, because have you ever been a school child and you've climbed a tree and peered into a bird's nest? Have you actually seen this or done this? And so you climb the tree, you see, and you look into the nest, and here it is at the end of verse 14. "There was none that moved the wing..." Ever seen a little bird flapping its wings in a nest? "Or that opened the mouth..." Well, you know what little birds are, little baby birds are like in the nest, with their gaping mouths. "Or that peeped," says the record. And here are the squeaks of the little ones. Can you see those babies in the nest? Isn't that what a nest is all about? The nest, brothers and sisters, the nest is a place to nourish up the young, you see. Now come back to Proverbs and 27. And see what this bird has done. Because Proverbs 27 says, in the 8th verse, "As a bird that wandereth from..." Why, not his nest, but her nest. You see, it's the mother bird, you see. And so what this bird has done, the straying bird of verse 8, has deserted her charge and endangered her offspring. "So is a man that wandereth from his place," says the proverb. And I think the lesson of the proverb is that the ecclesia, you see, is the nest where godly friendships are reared. Not only is it the place where our children should be reared, but it's where the mother birds and the father birds should also find repose with other members of the family. If we could use the language of the birds, the ecclesia is the place where others of the same brood are to be found. And the lesson is that if we want to develop true friendship, says Proverbs, you won't find them outside the nest. The friendships that we ought to seek are in the nest, within the family. Those are the only friendships that we need. Those are the only friendships that we ought to desire. And says the proverb, you will not develop good friendships by wandering away from the ecclesia. That's not where friendships are to be found. So you see, verse 7 says, too much friendship is bad. Verse 8 says, too little friendship is also equally bad. We'll never develop lasting friendships, brothers and sisters, if we're never at the ecclesia. And why do we need them? Why are they so important to us, these friendships that we ought to nurture? Well, verse 9 tells us. You see, verse 9 says, look, ointment and perfume rejoice the heart, so doth the sweetness of a man's friend by hearty counsel. Actually, the Hebrew is a little awkward in the 9th verse, but I think that the authorized version really captures the essential idea, and the idea is that it is a comparison, you see. Ointment and perfume rejoice the heart, and the sweetness of a man's friendship rejoices the soul, if I can put it that way. In fact, the Jerusalem Bible translates the phrase, fragrant oil gladdens the heart, friendship's sweetness comforts the soul. It's a parallel of ideas, you see. But you know why the one is superior to the other? Why is the sweetness of friendship far better than ointment and perfume that can rejoice the heart? And the answer is this, brothers and sisters, that you see, ointment and perfume can only ever beautify the outward man. But true friendships enrich the inner person. There's no comparison between the two. So you see the balance of friendship. Verse 6 says that faithful wounds bite and sting. But verse 9 says that friendship's balm soothes and heals. And both are needed, you see, in the spirit of friendship. But what this verse is telling us about is that sympathetic care is the special balm of a close friend. And we all need the counsel of the soul that comes from friendship. And ecclesial life provides the proper environment for those godly friendships to develop. Friendship involves the joy of being able to speak from the heart and to uncover one another's true needs and to respond to them. There's something particularly sweet, says the proverb, and soothing about true friendships. And so verse 10 says, thine own friend and thy father's friend forsake not. Neither go into thy brother's house in the day of thy calamity, for better is a neighbour that is near than a brother afar off. Now what does this thine own friend and thy father's friend mean, do you think, in the proverb? Actually, interestingly enough, really Solomon practiced this proverb, didn't he? You see, one of the great friends of David was Hiram, king of Tyre. Says he was ever a lover of David, and the word in the Hebrew means he was David's friend. And when Solomon came to the kingship, it says that he entered into a league of friendship with Hiram, and he never forsook, you see, his father's friend. But I think the spirit of the proverb is this, that this is talking about those friendships that have been long established, maybe even to the point of more than one generation, and sometimes that happens in the truth. That two families enjoy a special friendship based on a kinship of mind and spiritual things. And what begins with the parents may in fact move to the next generation of the children who also share a similar outlook on the things of the truth. Value those friendships, says Proverbs. Never forsake those friendships that have developed over time. Why? Because, says the proverb, they will stand the test of time. And they will stand the test of difficulty. And so the proverb goes on to say, don't go into your brother's house in the day of thy calamity. Better to have a friend that is near, a neighbour that is near, than a brother afar off. Does this mean that the brother is evil? Now, I don't think the verse is teaching that the brother necessarily is evil. In fact, I think the spirit is Proverbs 18. Come and have a look at Proverbs 18. I think this is the idea of this proverb, you see. It's not so much saying that we ought not to go to our brother when in difficulty. We should go to our neighbour in preference because our brother's unreliable or evil. No, I think it's the spirit of this verse, Proverbs 18, verse 24. A man that hath friends must show himself friendly. And here's the phrase. And there is a friend that sticketh closer than a brother. In other words, the lesson of Proverbs 27 and verse 10 is that there are friendships, you see, that are based upon principles that are higher and stronger than flesh and blood relationships. Isn't that what the verse is saying? That when you're in the time of calamity and trouble, true friendships based on spiritual principles are higher and stronger bonds than merely flesh and blood relationships. Now that's not to say that those in the flesh and the blood who are sisters or brothers may not be good friends and friends even in the truth. But friendship in the truth is not predicated on being flesh and blood, is it? Friendship in the truth is based upon a likeness of mind according to spiritual ideals. And I think the teaching of this proverb is that those friendships are better, higher, nobler, more enduring Bensley. And then verse 11 says, "My son, be wise, and make my heart glad, that I may answer him that reproacheth me." You know, the phrase "my son" here, it could be the words of a father to a son, couldn't it? Or it could be the words of a teacher to a disciple, because that's what the rabbis said, wasn't it? That's what the teachers said. They said, "My son." And their son was their disciple, the one who sat at the feet of the master. And I think that's the spirit, you see, of this proverb. Because, you see, when you ask yourself this question, by what measure was any teacher measured? By what rule was the value of any instructor measured? The answer is by the quality of their disciples. If you wanted to know the value of a rabbi, you looked at the disciples of that rabbi. You looked at the character and the disposition of the disciple, and you judged the value of the principles that that teacher taught. And so this teacher says, "My son, be wise. Make my heart glad, so that anyone that reproaches me as an advisor in spiritual things may have the answer in the wisdom of my pupils who have espoused spiritual friendships and who practice those principles in their life." That's the best answer, says this teacher, to my teaching, that my disciples learn and practice the principles of friendship. Verse 12. A prudent man foreseeth the evil and hideth himself, but the simple pass on and are punished. Now, what's interesting about this proverb is this. That if you come back to Proverbs chapter 22 for a moment, and to the third verse, we read these words. Proverbs 22 and verse 3. It says, "A prudent man foreseeth the evil and hideth himself, but the simple pass on and are punished." Why, that's interesting. That's the same proverb, isn't it? In fact, that's the identical proverb. So you see, when in Proverbs 27 and verse 12 we have this proverb, it's really the second time it's been used. This is a repetition of an earlier proverb. Now, why would a proverb that's already been used be found again in the book of Proverbs? And the answer is, you see, that now it is being set in a different context. Whatever context it finds itself in Proverbs 22, the principle is now being set in the context of friendship in chapter 27. And we're invited to therefore re-examine afresh a proverb already given in a new light, in a different setting. And the setting is that of friendship. Now, the lesson of the proverb is this. When it says, "A prudent man foreseeth the evil and hideth himself, but the simple pass on and are punished." You see, here is the difference between faith and wisdom and a blind optimism that all will be well when in fact there is trouble afoot. You know, brothers and sisters, everybody sees evil when it has arrived. But what this proverb says is the prudent person foresees evil. That's the difference, isn't it? They see it coming, and they turn aside. But the simple person blunders on until finally they run smack into whatever problem there was that was looming that they never saw. Now, you see, the principle has application in the realm of friendship. A prudent person sees an unnecessary conflict looming between friends or within the ecclesia. An unnecessary conflict looming. And they withdraw. They remove themselves. And then there are others in the ecclesia who seize hold of an issue and either through stubbornness or aggressiveness or naivety pass on and on and will not leave that issue alone. It happens, doesn't it, in ecclesial life. Somehow people seize hold of an issue like a dog worries a bone, and they get all passionate about this thing, and they talk to that brother, and that brother talks to that sister, and that couple talks to this, and before you know it, there's a controversy in the ecclesia over something sometimes that can be remarkably small. And the simple pass on and are punished. You see that word punished in Proverbs 27, verse 12? The word punished means to inflict a penalty, especially a fine, to levy a fine. The simple that push on in an issue eventually have to pay a fine. And you know what the penalty is that they pay, brothers and sisters? The penalty they pay is the rupture of a friendship. That's a very heavy fine to pay indeed, isn't it? Simply because they didn't learn when it was prudent to step back from unnecessary conflict between friends. So you see, I think the lesson of the 12th verse is this, that those that value friendship take due thought for the future consequences of their actions. We must be careful, brothers and sisters, if we are to preserve our friendships. Now look at verse 13, because here's a fascinating proverb. It says in verse 13, take his garment that is surety for a stranger, and take a pledge of him for a strange woman. Now, by the way, this is a repeated proverb as well. This is actually Proverbs chapter 20 and verse 16. Now it's found again in chapter 27. And again, we believe, in the changed context now of friendship. Now, we know what we're saying here when we talk about surety, don't we? We really mean, well, in modern parlance, we'd use the term guarantee, wouldn't we? Take his garment that has become guarantor for a stranger. So you see, a person has come to a moneylender and they've said, I want to borrow some money. And the moneylender has said, you need security. And so the person wishing to borrow has gone to another person and said, I need security to borrow money. And so this person has agreed and they've put up the security. Should the borrower default on the loan, they've become the guarantor. Now, I want you to see firstly, before we work out what the proverb means here, I want you to come back and look at the teaching of Proverbs on guarantees or suretyship. In Proverbs chapter 17... we read these words in verses 17 and 18, Proverbs chapter 17. Here's the teaching, you see, of the Book of Wisdom on the subject of guarantees. Now, look at the interesting way in which these two verses are joined together. You'd almost think that they were a paradox. Verse 17, a friend loveth at all times, and a brother is born for adversity. So you see, verse 17 seems to tell us about those friendships that will stand together through thick and thin, through trial and trouble, always there. And then verse 18 says, a man void of understanding striketh hands and becometh a guarantor in the presence of his friend. So that's interesting, isn't it? You see, one verse says, you see how friends stand together in trouble. And the next verse says, don't ever be a guarantor for your friend. Isn't that strange? You notice that? Now, you see, I don't think that verse 18 here is an excuse for selfishness. What I think it is a warning to avoid unwise generosity. There's nothing wrong with helping a friend, says the proverb, but there is here counsel against a blind guarantee that could rupture the friendship and ruin them both. In fact, by the way, I think friends would be the worst person to guarantee, because one is sort of emotionally impelled. Look, brother, I've got a problem, and all I need is a bit of cap. I just need a guarantor. Pretty hard to say no, isn't it, when it's your friend? Proverbs says, don't do it if you want to preserve your friendship. You'll ruin it. Don't ever do that, even to a friend, says the proverb. Now come back just a few chapters then to the 11th chapter and see what this proverb says. Proverbs 11 says, well, if the counsel of Scripture is not to become a guarantor for a friend, then how should we feel about being a guarantor for a stranger? Well, Proverbs 11 verse 15 says, he that is guarantor for a stranger shall smart for it, and he that hateth guarantees is guaranteed, we might say. So in other words, a person that stands as guarantor to a stranger will sting. It'll hurt, says the proverb. Now come back to chapter 27, and now let's view this proverb in the light of the principles of friendship. So what does this proverb say? Proverbs 27 and verse 13. It says, take his garment that is guarantor for a stranger, and take a pledge of him for a strange woman. So you see, I think what happens is this. Along comes the borrower to the moneylender and says, I want to borrow some money. The moneylender says, security. The borrower says to the guarantor, will you guarantee me? The guarantor says, yes, and puts up the security. Now, he doesn't put up the security, he offers to be guarantor. The moneylender says to the guarantor, do you know the borrower? The guarantor says, no, never met him in my life. The moneylender says, I'll have the security now, thanks. I'll have the pledge now, thanks. Not later, now. So the lesson of the verse is that anyone that was foolish enough to act as guarantor for a stranger would have to pay the bond then and there. In other words, the teaching of the proverb was to hold such a person to their obligations. The warning of the proverb is this, that we should not extend the most intimate benefits of friendship to one whose friendship is not yet understood or truly known. It's unwise to act as a friend to a stranger in the fullest sense of the word friendship. The lesson of the proverb is that friendship is a principle that grows over time. It must be tested. It needs to be measured. And we should not expect to enjoy close friendship until we ourselves have proved worthy of it. You don't rush into friendships, says the proverb. Friendships develop over time. And then verse 14 says, he that blesseth his friend with a loud voice, rising early in the morning, it shall be counted a curse to him. Now, brothers and sisters, in the truth, there are many different types of people. Some we describe as night owls. They go to bed late, and they get up late. Some we describe as morning larks. They go to bed early, and they get up early. Others are a sort of hybrid bird. They go to bed early, and they still get up late. Whatever we are, brothers and sisters, I think the principle of this proverb is this, that the early in the morning business of verse 14 is that it is a singularly unfortunate time, isn't it? The exhortation in verse 14, he that blesseth his friend with a loud voice rising early in the morning, I think the lesson here is against an over jolly heartiness at the wrong time. It grates and it irritates. One of the keys to good friendship is learning tact and sensitivity, being alert to the feelings and the reactions of others. The lesson of the proverb is that exaggerated praise or noisy flattery are not really the marks of true friendship. The proverb is saying that true friends don't need to loudly protest their love for each other. true friends learn to read each other. And it's true, you come into the ecclesia and you see a brother or a sister, you say, look, there's something not quite right. I can just tell you, go up to that, you say, look, what's wrong? Now, how do you know that something's not right? Because you've learnt to read each other. There's a sensitivity in building friendships. And the brother that charges up and bashes you on the back so your teeth fall out and says, how lovely to see you, and grips you, you know, it's not necessary, brothers and sisters. That's not the mark of true friendship. True friends have a tact and a wisdom whereby, in fact, they learn to read and to understand each other. Those are true friends. You know, there's a proverb that puts it this way. The man who hails you, Tom or Jack, and proves by thumps upon your back how he esteems your merit is such a friend that one had need be very much his friend indeed to pardon or to bear it. Now, we don't need that sort of noisy protestations of mutual affection, do we, in the developing of the friendships of the truth? Verse 15 says, a continual dropping in a very rainy day and a contentious woman are alike. Which, by the way, is very similar to a proverb in chapter 19 and verse 13. Not quite the same, but what Proverbs 19 and verse 13 had said is the contentions of a wife are a continual dropping. A continual dropping. Now here in Proverbs 27 and verse 15, we actually have something else added. We have the time, as it were, and the weather. Now we've got the circumstances. It's a very rainy day. So you see, what this proverb tells us is that there's rain on the outside and there's rain on the inside. The one prevents us from going abroad with comfort, and unfortunately the other prevents us from staying at home in peace. The one wets only to the skin. The other wets to the very bones. You know, there's nothing like an argument, brothers and sisters, with a neighbour or someone, which is like a sharp shower. It's over and gone. It's like a downpour, an outburst of rain, and it's finished. But that's not what this verse is all about. This is all about a ceaseless downpour with no means of shelter. Isn't that what the verse is saying? It never stops. Now, brothers and sisters, lest all the sisters should imagine that this proverb is unfairly concentrating on the role of women, I think we should remind ourselves in the Ecclesia that we're all part of the bride of Christ, and that therefore either brother or sister could offend in this particular matter. But within a marriage relationship, of course, as that special and unique friendship, the warning here is against that spirit that withers friendship. And sometimes this happens in the ecclesia. You see, someone gets hold of an issue and the drops of water begin. And they just never stop. They never, ever stop. And you see, that sort of thing is not helpful to friendship, is it, in ecclesial life? And certainly not within a marriage. In fact, verse 16, which is really talking about the same subject, you see, goes on to say, look, whosoever hideth her, hideth the wind. Actually, I think the New American Standard Bible perhaps puts that better. It says, he who would restrain her. The Amplified Bible says, whoever attempts to restrain a contentious woman might as well try to stop the wind. You ever tried to stop the wind, brothers and sisters? If you've got the wind whistling through the place and you try and shut the doors and shut the windows and stop up the cracks, of course what happens is that the wind just gets in through the little bits and pieces that are left. All it does is shriek louder. You can't stop it. In fact, the proverb goes on to say in the end of the verse, and he says it's like the ointment of the right hand which bereath itself. Now you see, into the right hand was poured the oil of anointing. And once the oil was in the hand, the hand would be used to anoint the body, you see, with ointment. Until finally, having anointed the body, all the ointment would be rubbed off, you see, from the hand, and the hand would be empty. No trace, no sign, you see, of the ointment. But the funny thing about it is that the scent of the ointment, you see, remains. You can tell that there's been ointment there. There's a perfume that still remains on the hand, you see, that gives you away. Well, so also with this woman. You see, the word bereath itself, which is an old English word, in the Hebrew here it means literally that it calls out. The ointment on the hand, although it appears to have all been rubbed away, it calls out. Everyone eventually can tell, you see. And so also is the nature of a quarrelsome wife, or a woman that cannot be restrained. In the end, it's a secret, brothers and sisters, that comes out. And everyone can tell, you see, that there's a problem. Because you just can't restrain her. And I think the lesson, you see, of verses 15 and 16, whether we apply it to married life or to ecclesial life, is that constant and incessant criticism withers friendships. We ought to be very careful, brothers and sisters, in our dealings the one with the other. And then verse 17 says, and here's the end of the section, you see. It says, iron sharpeneth iron, so a man sharpeneth the countenance of his friend. Now you see, in verse 15 and 16, the blows, as it were, the rain is all being rained on the one person by the other. It's all one-sided, isn't it? It's all one way. The criticism's all flowing in one direction. But you see, the thing about verse 17 is that here now is the spirit of mutual debate, of the vigorous testing of one another in the healthy competition of friendship, spurring one another on, sparking one another, the bracing effect of friendship and the healthy interchange of thoughts. Remembering, of course, that it is the striking of godly minds, the one with the other, that will stimulate to spiritual development. And it happens. There's nothing like friends when they get together to discuss the scriptures, and you see the minds striking the one off the other and sparks flashing. Good sparks. The sparks of interesting ideas. So you see, both are sharpened and both are improved by the mutual experience here of healthy debate and the vigorous testing of one another in the spirit of true friendship. Oh, brothers and sisters, how much we need friendships in our life and the truth. In order that we might value them, develop them, nourish them, value them, these are the proverbs that Solomon wrote, in order that we might develop those friendships that will lead us to the kingdom and to eternal life. In the words, brothers and sisters, of a hymn, then let each esteem his brother better than himself to be, and let each prefer another, full of love, from envy free. Happy are we, happy are we, when in this we all agree.